The Broken Arrow, a traditional bow hunting podcast with your host, Schaefer Magnet and Chris Seacole. Brought to you by Black Widow Bows, Safari Tough, Great Northern Quivers, Addictive Archery, and Laurel Mountain Outfitters.
Yep, how you guys doing? Excited?
Well, Chris isn't going, even though we still are trying to convince him to somehow.
But. Yeah. Oh, man, dude, there are some things in life that you just got to just say, you know what, and throw the bow in a truck, grab a pair of boots and a pack, and just disappear for a couple of days. Promise you, you won't regret it.
See, he's doing that. It's just to Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know what? I will say this. I will honestly say, now that my kids are raised and they are out and that kind of stuff, I definitely wish I would have spent a little bit more time doing some of that family stuff. You know, I mean, we did a lot of it, and we did Disney 4 times, and we did a lot. But there, you know, looking back, you know, now there's a lot of stuff I'm looking forward to taking my grandson to, you know, and simply things that you wish you would have done when you had a time before. So I can't blame you there. Family time's important.
I threw that one out there. So maybe next year I'll get out and tag along and do that hunt, because I do want to hunt pigs. That's high on my list.
Yeah, and there's a lot of time in life to hunt. But your kids are, how old are they?
We have one, and he's 11.
Okay, so he's 11 today. So tomorrow he'll be 16.
Exactly.
Saturday he's going to be 20, and then that's how fast it goes.
I feel that so hard right now. It's like, how in the world is Amelia a year and a half?
It flies, man. It flies. Goes so quick.
I'm telling you, yesterday he was here to here in my arm, you know, and now he's here. And so this will probably be the last year he'd get a kick out of Disney, and I'm sure next year he'll be on to something else. So we'll make the most of it.
And it's not long before they're gone. They're out of the house. Mm-hmm. I mean, my daughter, when she turned 18 years old, she started her own business at 18. She got her own apartment at 18. Then her boyfriend moved in with her at 19. They moved down to Georgia. They got married at 20. She got pregnant at 20. Now I'm a grand, you know, all this stuff happened in like 2 years, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So like I said, that time flies. Soak every second of it up.
Yep. Yeah, that is the plan. So. But next year, I've never hunted out of state. I live in Pennsylvania, and I've always hunted in state, and it's something I want to do, definitely. And pig, like I said, pigs are really high on the list.
Yeah, and Pennsylvania is a great state with a lot of great opportunities.
Sure, absolutely.
Very good place. But there is a whole other world out there too that you'll probably take advantage of.
Yeah, once I experience it, I'm sure that'll be the end of my non-traveling. But I definitely got to do it.
Yeah, I've been on many once-in-a-lifetime trips. Never once-in-a-lifetime. Either once-in-a-lifetime at first, then they turn around to be, many more.
Yeah, exactly.
That was like my bear hunt last year. I didn't expect to go back this year, but that's what's happening, so.
it's addictive. And, you know, and then you start doing stuff, and you start finding – it's one of the reasons I have never been elk hunting. I've been – on 2 caribou hunts, which were great, but I try to not. It used to be where my attitude was set a budget up and do a big hunt every 2 years. Then I got tired of waiting every 2 years. So then I said, forget that. Let's just do other things that are cheaper, and I can do multiple ones per year. And that's what you're doing. So, you know, there were times that I was doing, you know, there was no hog hunting down here when I lived in Michigan back in, you know, 20 years ago. I was never doing, or didn't even know you could public land hog hunt. So, but we would do 3 or 4 hog hunts on these, like, Tennessee game preserves that were pretty brutal hard. They were tough, but we would do 3 or 4 of them a year. Plus we'd be bear hunting twice a year, once in Michigan, once in Canada, you know, and like I said, we were doing it all because it was affordable, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
And it seems like a lot of opportunities starting to go away, especially out west now.
Yeah, and even for whitetails, it's like that. It used to be where I could draw Kansas. I drew Kansas every year for 8 years in a row, and now I got buddies that haven't been able to draw it in 4 years.
Yeah,
it's just getting to be a nightmare, you know, with that kind of stuff. So, yeah, and, you know, what's Iowa up to? Iowa's like every 2 or 3 years.
I think it's more than that. I think it's 4 or 5 now.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, and I'm not going to hunt at a place that I can only hunt once every 4 or 5 years. Right. You know, I want to learn where it is. But, and, you know, Illinois is getting that where I don't know what Illinois is like now, but we used to hunt it on public land in Illinois. We 25 years ago, we were able to do it every year, a couple times a year. And then all of a sudden it turned into this where you had to apply at like 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning and you had to do it by phone. And literally you called like 6 minutes after it opened up and you were already too late, you know?
Yeah.
And then we never went back after that. So I don't know how that is, but a lot of these places are tough with that. It's you know, it's definitely tough. They say that the hunter numbers are going down. But hunters are becoming much more mobile, and once they become mobile in their home state, they want to go mobile in another state. So absolutely. Then they start traveling. And also, even though hunter numbers are going down, we're losing property at a tremendous level.
Yeah, I was going to say hunter numbers may technically be going down, but I bet you if you compare it to huntable land, it's the ratio is not even.
Right. Hunter numbers are down, but the amount of hunters in the woods are up tremendous.
Correct. Yeah. Property's going away, and the property that's out there is hard to get access to sometimes.
Right, yep. For sure. Mm-hmm. And it is a big movement for public land. You know, everybody wants to go on public. It used to, again, 20 years ago, everybody was afraid to go on public land. They thought they'd get shot, you know. Now public land's kind of the big thing. So, and again, people are mobile. Used to be where a hunter went out in the woods and he hung three ladder stands and he hunted those three stands all season long. And you knew where he was. If you walked across the stand, you knew that if there was a truck in the parking lot, that's where he was going. Those days are gone. Now these guys have got a saddle on their pack and one stick and two Twixie bars and they're gone. You know.
Oh, that's too good. I'm learning that the hunting scene's a lot like the housing market. While I was like in diapers, that should have been while I was hitting it hard.
Yeah,
that was the prime time I should have been out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the numbers were greater though. Then I mean, like I remember when I grew up in the '80s, and when I was a kid, like nobody asked permission; they'd just go. And if you drove up my road, my family owned probably a couple hundred acres at the time, and there'd just be cars lined the road. From all over and nobody knew who they were and nobody really cared back then. And now you'd never see that. You don't see that kind of number out there. But then again, where they used to hunt now holds houses and stuff, you know, so a lot of that property's gone.
Yeah, and Michigan was the same way. There was a time when Michigan had a million gun hunters during that opening day. Now it's down to like 600,000. So it's down a lot, but again, like we said, so is the property, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you go out opening day of gun season, Jason?
I used to hunt opening. Now, I started about 20 years ago being out of state during gun season. That's when I do my Midwest stuff.
Yeah.
Because Michigan gun season started on November 15th. It's funny because I used to complain. I was like, these guys get like 2 weeks of the prime time of the rut. Then I'd get mad about it. Now I moved to Georgia. Season's down here for deer. They start September 9th through October 13th is bow season. So 1 month of bow. October 13th through January 14th is gun.
Wow.
It's a whole different world.
Wow.
But I used to hunt. Like I said, the last 20 or so years, I was traveling during our Michigan gun season. But before that, opening day, I wouldn't miss it for nothing. Now, I didn't gun hunt. Not that I had a problem with it, but I always bow hunted then. But I would bow hunt during the gun season and I would hunt the pressure and I would kill some beautiful deer opening day because you go out there the day before. And at this time, people were baiting in Michigan. So I could go out there the day before the season and I could see where the tire tracks were. They would have a dedicated foot trail to where their bait pile is. Most people baited within 100 yards of where they're parking at because they didn't want to carry all that bait. So it was real easy for me to drive a perimeter of a section of public and know where everybody was going to be at. Yeah. And then I'd basically get in the middle or get in the exit routes. And I'd be there well before daylight and let them push a deer right by me.
Perfect.
And then I would stay on stand all day. So they'd push me four times. They'd push deer. They'd push them when they were coming in the morning. They'd push them when they left in the morning, push them when they came in the afternoon. And they'd push them that was in a time when most of these guys thought it was bad to walk out with a flashlight because the deer will bust you. They always left at deer 30, you know, prime time. And they're getting out of their stands, you know. So that was my opening day tactic.
Oh, that's perfect.
It seems like Georgia's got a lot going for it, for especially for traditional bow hunting. I mean, you have an amazing organization, Traditional Bow Hunters of Georgia.
And the people. I'll tell you, like I said, I've been in Michigan my whole life. I had one true good that I hung out with all the time. Now, I knew some people through the stuff that I do, mm-hmm. but I had one friend, John Tucker from Tactical Saddle. He's been one of my best friends for the last 30 years. I knew him, but we live 3 hours away. So when I was in Michigan, hunt alone, shoot alone, all this stuff was alone. I moved down here, and everybody that I'm meeting is so amazing, and they're just quality people, and they want to hunt with you, and they want to hang with you, and they want to talk, and they want to shoot, and they want, you know, they're giving you the shirt off their back. I've never been in a place in my life with people as good as the people that I have met down here in Georgia. I love them.
It seems like you got a strong representation for the traditional archery community. That's
there
awesome.
Is for sure. Yeah. And these guys are killers too. I mean, these guys put some animals on the ground. You know, when I was in Michigan, people are like, you know, oh, you've killed 150 deer, and they, I don't believe you. And they, you know, down here, you tell somebody, you see some of these guys and tell them, yeah, I shot 175 deer. It's like, I did that last week, you know.
I was going to say, that's Chris Spikes has that on his freaking one bow tallied up.
Yeah, and like James Woods and Robert Carter and Chapman. And, you know, there's so many people down here that, like I said, their numbers are pushing. When you're counting deer and hogs and animals, they're, you know, there are 300-400 animals on the ground. These guys are diehard get-her-done hunters, you know.
We might have talked about this with Mark Pointer on, but what's the deal with pigs? Is that a year-round deal? I can't remember. Did he not?
I will put it this way. I will say it this way for a public, because this is public, this podcast, basically. Yep. There is a season for hogs in Georgia. It is basically anytime there's a small game season open, and then there's a 2-week dog hunting season. You know, but if there's something else in season, you can hunt a hog. There are some specialty access places where you can hunt year round, but they require a bunch of hoops and some specialty stuff to get in on.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Trying to figure out where I was going with this. I know hogs are, as long as there's an open hunting season, right? You're good to go.
Correct. As long as there's a season. Yep. But and so basically, realistically, you can hunt hogs from August 15th through the last day of February. And then if you want to pay the prices for like turkey licenses, you know, which are pretty expensive for not out of state, you can hunt them from whatever the turkey season is, March 15th through April 15th or so. Don't quote me on those dates. I'm not a turkey hunter. I hunt hogs during that season, you know, that kind of stuff. And then, like I said, there is a special 2 week at the end of May, where they can run dogs on them. And these guys, they run it. The WMAs get wiped out pretty hardcore, with that dog hunt. Some of these guys, you know, I talked to people last year on one WMA, one truckload of guys killed 40 hogs out of there with dogs, you know, and that was one set of guys. With
That's
dogs.
Crazy.
Yeah.
They'll
wreck a WMA for the whole year there.
One thing I thought was pretty cool, it was on one of your Patreon videos, was the WMA got so flooded out you were canoeing the roads. That's like weirdly amazing in my head.
Well, that's how you mentioned Mark Poirier. That's how I met him. I was on a South Carolina hog hunt, the same thing. This WMA completely flooded. So I brought an inflatable kayak so that I could kayak right down the roads, just paddling right down. When we say roads, they're like two tracks, you know, they were waist deep. So I brought that inflatable kayak and I was sitting there chilling on a little high spot, and he came paddling by, and then he started paddling fast over to us. I thought he was going to yell at me for hunting in one of his spots. And he's like, "You're chasing Sam Kobiak?" Yes. Am I in trouble? "Mark, man, nice to meet you." And we've been good friends ever since. And he is, I told you, you know, some of these guys down here are killers, and he's one of them. And not only is he that, he's as genuine as they come. He's a great guy. Love Mark.
We had him on the podcast. I think it was we had him on a few weeks ago, but man, that was a good time.
He's a handful, isn't he? He's a riot. I love him.
Oh, he's a riot. Yeah.
It's going to be a fun week down in Georgia. That's for sure. When I was deciding what to do for a pig hunt this winter, I was talking with Newman, who's one of the guys that's going to be in camp, and he was mentioning, I think this was during like bow season, that he normally did the South Carolina hunt.
Yep.
And then a couple in Georgia. And he was like, I should be going on all of them. So if you want help or if you want to come to any of them, let me know. And I ended up choosing the one I did because it overlapped with President's Day and whatnot. And then the South Carolina one they didn't do because of all the flooding that normally is there. So
the South Carolina one doesn't happen until March if we're thinking of the same one. Be. The one I've been there on is in March, and it's pretty phenomenal. It's a five-day hunt. And South Carolina's got way more hogs than Georgia does. South Carolina's
no kidding
with hogs. You just got to be careful on the dates and some of the rules and stuff there. But it's, you know, affordable tags, and there's a ton of hogs there. When I was on that South Carolina hunt, we were seeing 30 and 40 hogs a day.
No kidding. That's good to know.
Yeah, and if it floods out, it's even better. You know, because there's a bunch of WMAs that have hogs there, and a bunch of them have this specialty hunt on them for the hogs. And but it's pretty phenomenal. It, you know, like I said, I'm not going to tell anybody where I go or, you know, where, but I'm just saying there's a bunch of WMAs in South Carolina that are phenomenal hog hunting down there. It's, whew, man, it's good stuff.
How far are you from South Carolina? It can't be too far.
I'm technically 1 hour from the edge of it.
Okay.
From where I live at. Where I would hunt at, it's about 4 hours from me, you know, kind of stuff. Most of those WMAs are going to be over on the coast.
Yep.
Kind of stuff. And the beauty of that is you have Myrtle Beach over there. Now, some of the WMAs, it might be an hour drive one way or an hour and a half to get to them. But the point is you could do a family trip out there. You know, you could. That's what me and John did last time we were out there. We brought our wives and that kind of stuff. And they went to the beach and did all kinds of stuff while we were hunting all day. We come back and then we take them to dinner and hang out all night. And then, you know, that's what we did.
That's what you call a win-win.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Oh, that is too good. Well, we've gotten into this quite a ways. I'm assuming everybody knows who you are, Jason, but before we get too far, we should probably at least have you introduce yourself.
I'm Jason, and I have the Traditional Bow Hunting and Wilderness podcast channel. Actually, I should say channel because it's no longer a podcast. I don't do the podcast anymore.
You finally stopped. It was funny. Really? I was telling Chris. Chris was like, I know who he is. I've listened to a few things, and I've watched quite a few videos. And I'm like, man, he's like started the traditional bow hunting podcast scene. And I was trying to find when you started.
12 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. This might be sacrilegious, but I never really listened to the podcast, but I always watch your YouTube videos, especially like your stuff on mobile hunting and things like that. That's where I always thought of you as a YouTube guy. And then Schaefer broke that to me tonight. Oh, it's the oldest podcast in traditional archery.
Yeah, 550 episodes, I think, is something on there. But and they're great, and I enjoy doing them, but I don't have the time anymore. I used to do them because I do them in the car while I was driving from Michigan. In Michigan, I was driving from Houghton Lake to Detroit every week, 3 hours each way. So it gave me something to do in a car, headset on, and record them while I was driving. Now I don't do that drive anymore that I live here. So it's too hard to do it. Plus, I have the Patreon, which is where I put all the really good content. So putting all that great stuff there and then trying to make a podcast similar, but watering it down, I felt the quality I'll still do a few podcast interviews kind of thing like this occasionally, and I'm going to put them on my YouTube channel, but there is no more dedicated weekly podcast, and that lets me focus more on the videos because I put out content every single day. Two videos on my bow hunting YouTube channel, two videos on my Patreon channel, three or four videos a week on my truck review Samco Workshop channel. This is how I make a living now, is content.
Gotcha.
Beautiful.
I'm gonna break in here real quick. Schaefer, are you recording?
I am, yes.
Because my external hard drive is having a like meltdown, and I'm just making sure we got both of us recording.
If there's anybody that would understand this type of situation, it'd probably be Jason.
Well, sitting here talking to you guys now. I can hear. I'm like, I hit mute and it goes away, and I'm like, man, it's me. What is it? And it's this thing. It's just buzzing away. Sorry to interrupt, fellas.
No.
I gotta put it on.
So, Jason, one of my absolute favorite parts of your podcast is every episode. It started exactly the same way. I have no idea what number this is.
And this last one, when I told everybody I've done, I'm like, I have no idea what number this is, but it's probably the last time I won't know, because from now on they'll be on YouTube and I'll be able to label them.
I remember one. I think it was a scouting one you did that I listened to, and you were like in the truck. Then you'd leave, you'd be scouting, And you come back and you record a little bit more and then you go back out. It was really cool. It was a good episode because I learned a lot off of it. That's one thing. Everything I watch of yours, I always learn something from.
So, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Jason Samkowiak costing money to all of our wallets. Well, yeah. The worst is when I don't even make it through the video and it's already ordered. It's like
yep. Shaper's a consumer.
There's usually one gift. So one of the things we do for Christmas is like instead of addressing gifts from like son to father, father to son, or, you know, whatever that normal thing is. It's like if the gift ties into somebody else somehow, like my dad got me a meat grinder one year.
Nice.
From Jason Samkowiak because it was the one you had on your channel.
Oh, the lamb three-quarter. Yeah. Big bite. Yeah, very nice.
I mean, I got it like 3 years ago. Sucker is still pristine new in the package, but that's, you know, besides the point. It is ready to go when we need it.
Yep. And so, handed down from generation to generation. Yeah. It's quality.
Yeah, that so, will never die.
Yep. Yeah, I try real hard to only talk about products that I've used or that I really like. I get emails. I get 10 or 15 emails every single day from manufacturers. Hey, we want to, you know, to review our product, review this light, review these car floor mats, review, you know, all this stuff that comes in all the time. And honestly, half of it, if I go look at their website, it's like, nope, not interested. You know, really, I the only things I do review is the stuff, like you said, do you see me using every day? Mm-hmm. I have to use it, prove it, and test it and beat it. And before I approve it, you know?
Yeah.
That could be a tagline. I don't know what you just said, but it flowed really well.
We got it on record.
On one of your hard drives.
Oh, that is great. So, Jason, one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because everybody seems to ask you the same questions on here, and I'm sure we're going to ask you some.
Yes.
And it's a question that we always ask everyone. Your first traditional kill. Not sure I've ever heard the story. How it all started. So I figured that would be a good one to get from you.
Before we even get to that, how long have you been shooting traditional archery?
93.
And what were you shooting compound prior to that?
I shot a compound for exactly 3 months.
And so that was like your introduction into archery hunting was a compound for 3 months, right?
Yep. I was at a skeet shooting range. That I used to go shoot skeet at all the time, and they had an archery range. And I had just moved out on my own. I was 18 years old, and I just moved out. And I was like, God, this is expensive, buying clays, buying shells. I'm like, but these guys can keep reshooting those arrows. So
they
I thought,
the bolts back.
I make that point all the time to the guys at work.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. So I thought, well, so I went to a trade show at a Gibraltar Trade Center, and they had a Golden Eagle compound. I didn't even have enough money for it, so I had to call my mom. She put it on a credit card, gave the guy the number over the phone, and I bought that bow. Went and so that was on like September 15th. Opening day was October 1st. So I learned to shoot with it, got really good with it really quick. I walked out in the woods the second day of archery season, and I walked down a motorcycle trail. It had a whole bunch of deer tracks crossing it. I sat down next to a poplar. I had my bow laying on the ground next to me, flat on the side. And this is when you had the overdraws and all that kind of stuff, yep. Short little arrows. And I was sitting flat on my butt facing this way. And I heard, and I look over my shoulder, and here came three does like 18 yards behind me. And they came by and they saw me. They're downwind of me. And they stopped. And the mom does is looking right. She's staring right at me. I'm looking at her like this. And I rolled over and I stood up and I just stood right up from that tree. And I looked at it. And went, oh, I forgot my bow. I bent down, grabbed my bow. The arrow had these TM Hunter rests, so it was already like dropped down between it. So I can't draw. So I had to unhook my release, put the arrow back up on top of the thing, hook the release, draw it back, point it at the sky, line up, get set, find it in my peep. And then boom, and I shot her. And she stood there the whole time and let me do all that. So she was suicidal.
That deer was destined to be a first deer.
Yes. And then I didn't know how to gut it or do anything. So I had to I ran out to the road and flagged down some old guy driving by, and he showed me how, which was really cool. And then So at that point in my life, I was now an expert bow hunter.
Okay? Right.
Naturally.
I had everything solved, but now I had to be like a pro. So I immediately sold that bow and I bought this Browning Ballistic Mirage compound because it was like the speed, the fastest bow in the world. And I was between that and a PSE like Mach 3 or something. But so I bought this Browning bow. And I had it for about 4 days, and I couldn't get it to tune right. I took it to this archery store. They couldn't get it to tune right. Found out it had a split limb in it. Fortunately, they had another one of the bows there. So being in the middle of hunting season, they actually took that bow apart and put the new limb on there for me.
Oh, perfect.
It worked out good. But then that limb split literally a week later. And so I was like, that's enough. I took the bow back to them, and it fortunately gave me my money back. And I was at Gander Mountain, and I was shooting right-handed with a compound at the time, and even though I'm left-handed. And then Gander Mountain had recurves there, and I grabbed a Martin Mamba recurve, and I was shooting it right-handed. And the guy said, "You're right and left-handed here." As I was getting ready to buy it, I said, "I am left-handed." He did the dominance thing for me for my eye. Next thing you know, he said, "No, just order one." So I ordered that Martin Mamba. It's actually hanging right there behind me.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. But I ordered that bow from Gander Mountain for $215 with tax, and it was sent to me a week later. So I got that, and then I practiced a whole bunch, and I did go out in December with that. But I actually didn't kill a deer till 3 years later. So over the next three seasons with that recurve, I shot over the back of 12 deer from a tree stand. Just I was good, but I just kept shooting over top of them. So I shot over top of 12 deer. At that time, I had now got a Brackenberry custom made recurve, my first one. And then I was out at Holly Recreation Area in southern Michigan. And I was deer hunting, and by this time I had done a lot of bow fishing, and I knew that you got to aim to shoot below the fish, you know, with the light refraction. So I told myself, when a deer comes in, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to shoot. I'm going to aim below it. And that's what I did. Here came a doe, and she cruised by, and she stopped right here, and she was kind of broadside to me about 12 yards away, and I drew and I locked down like I would. I literally dumped down like I was going to shoot a deer below it, shot. And hit her perfect. That arrow came in and right through the top of the shoulder blade, exited right, you know, into the arm here. And she turned her head and kept banging into the arrow that was there. And she took four steps, fell over dead right there. And that was it. So
freaking beautiful.
And that's when I became a professional traditional bow hunter.
Awesome.
Oh,
that is awesome.
Yeah. But 3 years shooting over the top of 12 of them in 3 year period.
That seems to be a popular trend, if it makes Definitely. You feel any better.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
It's always that, you know, 12th to 15th one where you finally learn to shoot a little lower.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I did. Showed myself, just like bow fishing, aim for the deer underneath the deer. That's what I told myself.
So how long did you bow hunt before you kind of adapted where you are now?
What do you mean as far as adapted?
To where you got to like your mobile hunting and like the technique you use now, was that pretty much right from the beginning, or was there a progression to get to where you are in that aspect?
During those first 3 years where I missed a lot of those deer, I was hunting over bait. So I'd have carrots out, and I think that's why you miss a lot, because they're so wired.
Yeah.
But then I got to a point where by then I realized that the deer don't come in the mornings to bait, so I can't really hunt good in the mornings over bait, just the evenings. And so what I started doing about year two, even though I was still missing a bunch, is I started learning to hunt food like oaks and things like that in bedding areas, and learning how to hunt for the mornings, and then having to fail safe of hunting over bait at night was kind of my tactic. But by the time I had killed that deer, I was transitioning from hunting up north because I was sick of driving up there, and I was hunting back locally in the Detroit area. And that's where it started. That deer that I killed, that doe, I was in a River's Edge tree stand that they made back then. It was cool because it didn't have any chains on it. It actually had two bars underneath of it that came to a point. So the platform was here and it had bars that came under. It was a really neat stand. But somebody had stole it from me. And when they stole that stand, I thought, I'll never leave a stand in the woods again because somebody's going to take it. It's going to go up and down with me. So I bought an API Luma Lock, or I can't remember what it was, but a little 6-pound API stand. I loved it. And then from that moment on, I was mobile. That was it. Now I did everything from carrying all the full stick sections where they stick together up the tree.
Yeah.
You know, on my shoulder. I mean, I went through everything you could think of. And this is in a time when, remember, there weren't even safety harnesses. We were still all using that double belt, you know, one belt around you, one around a tree with that little spacer between it.
Yep.
And then me and John figured out that we could take one of them and sewed suspender straps on it. So that, and then we would tie a rope on it with a carabiner so we could make our own, almost like a lineman belt, so we could be hands-free. And then we started using those chest harnesses and we modified them. And, you know, so we started way back then. Then I went to like the Crawford screw-in steps and then the strap-on steps from Maristep to all sorts of different tactics. The, you know, the ladder systems, I tried it all, you know, but it was always mobile ever since that from the beginning because somebody stole my tree stand.
That would be quite the, can you imagine somebody like public land real busy and you just see somebody walking in with the full three-section
yep.
stick to get.
Yeah, they were steel just, too. They were, I still have them.
Oh, that'd be so priceless just to see that just casually walking through a field edge.
Yeah.
Where are you at now with your setup? What are you still using the Assault 2 or did you moved on, didn't you?
Well, I still think, in my opinion, that Assault 2 is probably the best stand ever made, especially for the money. I love it.
Yeah.
Now, I went to the B stand, from that to the B stand, and I loved the B stand when I was in Michigan. Mm-hmm. The downside to it down here is down here I'm in snake boots or I'm in big, bulky rubber boots all the time, covered in mud. And that stand platform is pretty narrow. And when you're hunting a feed tree, it's not like when I was in Michigan and I was at trail intersections or funnels and I knew exactly where the deer were going to come through. Here at a feed tree, I could be sitting in my tree and they might come from this way. They can come from any place they want to. And I'm often spinning on the stand as they're doing that. And at B stand, I kept getting tangled up in the cables all the time,
yep.
Especially wearing big snake boots. So I actually called Dan to see if he made a bigger stand. He doesn't. So I was like, well, crap, what am I going to do? So I went back to my Assault stand, used that a lot, fell in love with it again, and used that on my Midwest trips and everything. And then this, right after I got home, I bought a Lone Wolf Custom Gear 1.0. Yeah, well, the 1.0, which is basically the same thing as the Assault, and I really like it. I like it a lot.
I was at their booth yesterday at the there's a NRA show in Harrisburg right now. Mm-hmm. And I stopped by their booth and I've never seen their stands in person. And I was,
nice.
I was impressed. Yeah. I mean, what's the small one, Schaefer, the 0.5?
0.5. Yep.
Wow. It had the four sticks that fold flat and it's got the J hooks with the screws in them. Man, is that slick.
They got a pretty brilliant system.
They do.
If they had really the tall post when I bought my 0.5, I might still own it, but being 6'1", The 0.5 was a little dainty up in the tree.
It is a sweet setup though. We all picked it up when we were all just kind of shocked.
Yeah.
I now everybody picks on me for this one now because I always kind of joke around about making fun of saddle people and their saddles. And and of course my friend Ryan, he carries a brand from here in Pennsylvania and I don't remember their name. Schaefer, do you remember?
It's Ape Canyon,
yeah.
By Rock and Arbor.
Yeah, so I guess the company started out as an arbor company and a rock climbing company, and they've been in the business for a long time, and they kind of transitioned over into saddles. So I actually tried one on, and they had a stage beam, you know, with the X's and stuff, and they had some tie-offs on it, and I sat in it, and I was like, it was comfortable. I was surprised by it. That's the first time I've been in one. Now, I think my biggest hang up with them is shooting out of them. It just seems a little awkward.
I'm not a huge fan of saddles.
Yeah.
But it's two reasons. One is that crossover, like you said, because I'm spinning in the tree. They're coming from any way. And being facing this way with that tether, it's pretty hard, especially the longbow, to get to this side.
Yeah.
In order to push up. The other thing is I hate staring at the tree. I don't want to sit there and stare at the tree all the time. And I know I can look around it, but the tree is always right in my face. And I don't sit for less than 5 or 6 hours any sit, you know, and that's just too much, you know?
Yeah. I think the idea of being able to just kind of sit and hang is appealing, but that's about it.
Yeah, well, they're much safer too. There's no doubt about it because of the fact that there's no hanging a stand. There's no transition from your sticks to your steps. Well, mm-hmm. I guess there is with the platform. Now everybody uses a platform, so I take that back. But there's a lot of safety factor. Warren Womack was the one that brought that to my attention. He started using a saddle because, you know, he's you know, almost 80 years old and he's still hunting out of trees. And he's like, I can't afford to fall. And so that saddle is that safety factor for him. So there's a lot of benefits. And, you know, and John, my buddy, he makes Tactisaddle saddles.
Mm-hmm.
They're incredible stuff and he loves them too, but he'll be the first to tell you also, if you're going to go sit all day, he'll sit out of his all day, but he also hunts out of him exclusively. But he'll tell you, for the average person, if you're going to do an all day sit, get in a tree stand where you got some comfort. You can move, stretch, you can get stuff done. He's like, the saddles are a fantastic tool for a lot of stuff. But when it comes time for your all day sits and rut stuff, you know, unless you're acclimated to that saddle, it's going to be a lot for you to swallow.
Yeah.
I know the thing I like about shooting out of a stand more than a saddle is it's very black and white. Like, yes. I feel like my range is greater in a tree stand. I mean, in reality, I can shoot like 270 degrees out of a tree stand. It's just once your bow hand needs to be exactly where the tree is, that's pretty much where I can't shoot.
Right.
Versus a saddle, I feel like using the clock and the tree's 12, like 6 to 11 is like okay. And then anything on the other side is just gone.
Right, especially trying to transfer over that bow.
Correct.
And Dan's got some pretty cool tactics he does with that, so, you know, because they got that rolling bridge and things like that. But it's not, you know, I'm not afraid to pack some weight in. You know, I mean, again, as we were talking, there was a time I was carrying 40 pounds worth of, you know, stand gear in and out all the time. Those sticks were like 20-something pounds, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't mind packing a little bit of weight for the comfort.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I know. I was worried about weight savings, I got plenty on my person that I could.
That's right. Me too.
Easily lose
the same weight. Yep. Yeah, I can shed 25 and be all right with it.
I don't know. I tried them. I tried it on, and it was comfortable. But at the same time, I have too many reservations.
Yep. And there's nothing wrong with them, and there's nothing wrong with stands. The same.
Yeah.
Are very popular, but for me, tree stand all day long, and I'm at that point now where, like I said, being down here, I need a big platform. I want room to be able to spin around. I only killed one deer down here in Georgia from a stand this year, and that one, I mean, you know, Schaefer, you probably saw it in a Patreon one in that video, but I mean, I think I spun on that stand 5 times. Well, he was inside of 10 yards. I shot him at 4 yards, but while he was inside of 10 yards picking up chestnut acorns, he was zigzag. I didn't know which side, but I mean, I literally turned like 5 times in my tree stand, you know, waiting to see which side he was going to come on, you know?
Yep.
And it's important to have that capability for me.
Yeah.
So Patreon came up. So that reminded me of a question that I had. So when you have a deer coming in on your Patreon, you tend to talk a lot, mm-hmm. like to yourself. And I was curious if that was a byproduct of having the camera or if you always did that before. Because it's like you're talking to yourself, but at the same time, it sounds like you're talking to the camera. And right. I'm like, I wonder if he's always done that or if it's just because the camera is on.
It's for you guys, for the camera. But people ask all the time, they're like, how do you not get busted when you're talking and you got animals that are 5-10 yards away from you? It's like, I have, what I'm doing is I'm in Premiere Pro, I'm actually bringing that audio up. So
yeah.
And the GoPro has a speaker on the bottom of it. So it's all I got to do is a very soft whisper and it sounds really loud in there. And then I can bump it up in audio. I'll adjust that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bring that up so that you guys can hear it in regular sound. But realistically, I'm like, you know, it's like that, but you're hearing it.
So. That's some of my favorite audio of the whole videos. Stop. Damn it. Stop.
We're about to get winded. We're about to get winded.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Because it is like, it is what everybody's thinking in those moments. You're just right. Saying it out loud.
Yep. Yep. Oh, I'm feeling it on my neck. Get 3 seconds. He's gone. There he goes. You know.
Oh, it is priceless. Yeah. Oh,
I like it that way, having that camera running. No, it's a lot of fun for me, and I learned so much. I got a video coming out on a regular channel here pretty soon. I think I called it 70 Hunts I View What I Learned, and it obviously I'm not showing them these hunts because that's for Patreon people, but I'm breaking down the reality of what it's like, because I can go frame by frame on all 70 of these shots in the last 4 years with a camera on there. I can go frame by frame for everything and see what the animals' reactions are, what they do. It's amazing, you know, what you see when you're looking right over that arrow for that whole time, you know.
How long have you been filming for?
I think about 4 years now. I did do it a little bit before, testing it out, seeing, and then, I did it for YouTube for my vlogs that were on YouTube, but I wouldn't actually show the shots because YouTube would demonetize me if I showed the shot or the animal. So you had to put it in black and white, you know, you had to do all this weird stuff. Yeah. So I wouldn't show a lot of that. But once, that's the reason I started the Patreon. So on the Patreon, it shows everything that I've done. I counted them. I have 70 clips of arrows shot at animals on camera is what I have over the last few years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I didn't take 70 animals. I can miss better than most people, I promise you.
What's at all that time, what's like, somebody wants to start filming, what's a piece of advice you'd give them?
Use your phone.
Yeah.
That'd be my best advice. Forget cameras, forget mics, forget very zooms, forget camera arms, forget all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I've tried it all. And what I use is my cell phone. So especially if you're in a tree stand, you're going to see the deer usually from a little farther out. When they're coming in, turn your phone on, record it. Like that. Then when they start coming in close enough, when they start getting, I'm a traditional bow hunter, so 20 yard max. When they're about 25 yards out, I just turn this off and I touch the top of my GoPro and it transitions from one to the other. And that's my whole entire system. And like I said, I'm a photographer and videographer for a living. I got, you know, 10 grand in camera gear there, 25 grand in camera gear there, cameras over. I got cameras everywhere. And all I want to use, my cell phone and a GoPro.
I get that. Yeah.
Simple. And there's no messing with stuff. There's no having to reach down and adjust the camera arm or do any of this kind of stuff. And then if the camera doesn't have a clear view that I have, you're not seeing the shot. You're seeing it exactly as I see it. Now, I do some tricks. I shoot everything in 4K at 4:3 ratio.
Yep.
And then what I'll do, because I'm exporting out and delivering on YouTube and stuff, and for my Patreon, I'm putting it as 1080. But because I'm shooting in 4K, I can zoom in four times and still be 1080.
Right.
So I'll take that GoPro. And then by shooting in 4/3, so most, you know, 1080 is shaped kind of like this is right here, and you got to be in that zone. Well, I'm shooting 4/3, so I'm more of a square, so yep. I can take any section of it. So if I'm off a little bit, I can move that frame up or down and adjust it.
Okay, that's so that clever. I
can always keep that stuff centered.
What GoPro are you using right now?
11.
11, black?
Yeah, the 11. Whatever one came out a year and a half ago.
Yeah,
it's 11. The 12 is pretty nice. Insta360, their new pro one is pretty sweet because it's got much better low light capabilities with a bigger chip in it, bigger sensor.
Mm-hmm.
That one's pretty impressive. I just don't know how heavy it is on a head with the way their mount is. I'm not sure. But that one also, the screen flips forward. It's pretty neat. So, but like my GoPro, I actually put stealth strips over the front screen because I've had the mistake before of that glowing, you know, and showing that when I was recording. And literally deer come in and this, you know, look right up at you.
Yeah.
I put stealth strips over that and, you know, kind of hide it a little better.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I was hoping to film someone. I went to Georgia and I was like, I don't have the head mount, but I do have one of the chest mounts, which I figured the chest mount, as long as it doesn't interfere with me shooting, would be
really cool.
It's
cool until you draw your bow, though.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And the other thing is, where's your chest facing when you're drawing a bow?
Well, no. So I knew I'm not going to get the shot, but I figured it'd be a really cool stalking. Like during the stalk, it would be really cool.
Yeah.
But obviously the shot part's going to be MIA.
I'll send you my head mount. Are you driving right by my house when you come down?
I doubt it. I don't know. Amazon one right now and it'd be here.
I was going to say, I got one you can borrow. You're more than welcome. What, Jason, are you doing anything? Because you got to kind of put it off to the side of your head pretty much, right? Are you doing anything special? Are you figuring anything out?
Yeah. So what I did originally when I started using it, I was using a DJI Osmo Action before that, which I love that camera too. It's a great one because it actually does better in low light than GoPro does. But it doesn't have quite the same features. But what I did with that is all of them have an app on your phone that you can download, GoPro, DJI, all that, so you can see it. So what I did is I put it on my head and then I started drawing and I'm looking at my phone on a tripod so I can see where I'm lining up at, what it's showing. And I basically figured that if I put it right over this eye, because I'm shooting 4/3, so I've got that big area that I can work with to take my section out of. Doesn't really matter where I'm tipped at, but I put it over my weak eye because of the way I shoot. It goes right here, and I actually tip it this way a little bit. People are always like, your camera's crooked. It's funny because then, like, when I'm trying to film stuff, if an animal's coming in and I'm transitioning to that, or even pigs come by and I'm not using my cell phone, I'm like, turn that on. Like, you can't hear it, anything, but I'm literally like, here comes that hog. He's coming by right there. Look.
It just makes the pigs think you're a little less intimidated. Is that Lenny?
Yeah. So it's just for that eye. And then once I got it dialed in, it was like, don't even mess. So now I don't even care. It's just always there. Yeah.
Yeah, they are sweet.
I'm getting used to, because I'll tell you what, it used to be where I left it in my backpack on the side pocket, and then when I get into hogs, I'd pull it out, put it on, get everything ready, and do that, and that was easy. Once I started wearing it in a tree stand, you got to kind of have it on all the time. Man, you're talking your first five hunts wearing it if you're doing 5 hour sits, your headaches. It's headaches, but then you get used to it. Now I can wear it 3 12-hour days in a row hog hunt and not even know what's up there.
That's cool. Yeah, they're neat. They're neat cameras. My son takes mine swimming all the time.
Yeah.
So I get all kinds of underwater footage from them. It's a riot.
Yeah, I love them. They work really good. Yeah. The thing about GoPro that you got to watch has busted me, and I've lost a few shots from it. On the GoPros, when you open them up to take the battery out, take the card out, when you put it back in, as soon as you close that door and you get it back together, test to make sure your top fire, your quick start button works.
Correct. Yep.
Because a lot of times that battery and that door don't lock right. And then you'll go out there and I'll go to hit it and I'll think it's going and it's not on, So every time I recharge a battery or pull the card out, put it back in, relock it, test it, make sure it works, let it run 3 seconds, shut it off, I'm good to go. That kind of thing. And protect it in your pack. I put a sock. I took an old sock and I put it over there because I've had to replace the screen on it once or the lens because of scratching it up on a flashlight or something in my pack. And then the other thing is make sure you're very careful with it, because I've also had it where I've accidentally in my pack turned it on, ran the battery out, didn't know it, put it on, and I'm going to record hunts. And it was such an amazing hunt, too. I made such a perfect shot on a calico hog. It was absolutely amazing. The battery was completely dead.
Bummer.
So when you're dealing with that stuff, there's a few things you got to watch and mess with,
Yeah, yeah. They are cool cameras. I've got a lot of good use out of mine.
Yeah.
So to transition back into pig hunting, another question I want to ask you, Jason, on a scale of 1 to 10, I don't know if that's the best way to say this, where is pig hunting now and compared to whitetails?
So if a deer is a 10, I would say that hogs are somewhere around a 28 to 30. Yep. I moved down here for them. Let's put it that way. I came down here on a hog hunt in the wintertime, about like what you're going to do. I loved it so much that the next year I came down for a week and we bought a camper, and then we came down with a camper, I had so much fun that week. We decided to leave that camper down here in Georgia all year long. They stored it for us. And then the next year we came back down for like 3 straight weeks. Next year after that, we came down, and before we left that winter, we said, let's just buy a house. So we bought a house to use as wintertime. And then the next year we came down, last year we came down for the whole winter. We loved it so much that we moved down here full time, and it's all because of the hogs. The deer hunting down here is not that good compared to everywhere else I've hunted, but the hog hunting, and the hog hunting isn't even that good. Like I said, South Carolina is much better hog hunting. Texas, if I was going somewhere to go hunt hogs personally from anywhere else, I'd be going to Texas or I'd be going to South Carolina because those ones are phenomenal. Georgia is high pressured hogs. These hogs are not dumb and they're nocturnal and it's a tough hunt down here. You're going to see. But I, like I said, this is, home here now, and the hogs win for me.
That's awesome.
Yep.
That is awesome.
It's different kind of hunting. With deer, you're sitting in a tree stand. You're sitting up there for, you know, hours and hours for a couple seconds of action. When I'm hog hunting, I'm walking anywhere from 5 to 12 miles a day, tripping over snakes and alligators and getting ate alive by hornets and, you know, spiders big enough to, they, you know, they'll grab your face and carry it off. You know, it's a different world. You know, it's a lot of fun. There's always an adventure every time you're out there.
Chris, you'll probably appreciate this. So last night, Jason calls me to kind of check in on the podcast. We talked about the pig hunt a little bit. And I was like here nor there on what I was going to do for like snake boots, snake gators. By the time we were done that conversation, I had snake gators ordered.
I knew that was coming. Well, Mark was like, I wear hiking boots. I've never seen a snake. I could tell Schaefer was concerned, though. It was pretty funny.
Well, so like I was telling Jason, Mark goes to me. I'm like, he's like, I should have taken stock out in snake gators or snake boot companies, because every single person from the north that's going on this hunt, that was the very first question they had. Because up here, it's such a non-factor that, you know, that's...
Yep.
And, if there's one thing you got to think about going south, I guess it's snakes.
You know, and realistically, your odds of running into them are pretty slim, okay? Because, I mean, I can count... Venomous snake-wise, I can count on two hands. So I've probably come across 9 venomous snakes that I've walked into in one whole year. So from January to January, because I've been down here for a year now. So November to November, you know, I can count probably 9 venomous snakes, probably another 36 non-venomous. But with that said, and I've never been struck at, but with that said, man, some of these snakes are nothing to play with. And here's the advantage to the snake boots or gators. It takes away the fact that I don't have to think about it. You know, the key. And, you know, and it's a big deal, because if I see hogs, I hear a hog squeal, and he starts squealing over there, and I want to get over there as quick as I can. I'm running through this stuff, you know, and, you know, like I said, you don't see a ton, but, and then on the same note, biggest timber rattler I've ever seen was in December, you know, and I watched him eat a squirrel. I mean, that was like a 4-foot-long timber rattler.
That's pretty cool.
Baseball. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, there's, like I said, they're here, you know, so.
What's your preference, boots or gators?
Boots. Because of the fact that, I got to wear rubber boots most of the time during the wet season. Here, you basically got a wet season and then you got a summer dry season. But during the wet season, you got to have rubber boots on, or people will just go in hiking boots and get wet and deal with it. Mm-hmm. But because it's usually warm. But so rubber boots and realistically, snake boots are the, like if you wear a lacrosse agility boot, they make a lacrosse snake agility boot, but it's only $10 more. So why not?
Really?
Oh, yeah. If you wear a lacrosse 4X alpha boot, rubber boot, they make a lacrosse 4X alpha snake boot, and it's like $10 more. They're actually cooler in temperature than what the other ones are. So,
yeah,
so it's like a no brainer to wear those. But during the dry season, I much prefer the nylon lace up rocky snake boots. They're lighter than most hunting boots.
Yeah,
they're not. You know, the rubber ones aren't. Rubber ones are about 5 to 7 pounds for those rubber snake boots. Like a same as what you're getting out of a regular rubber hunting boot.
But yeah.
Nylon ones, like those Rocky, whatever the Pro Life or whatever the lace up ones, they're only like a pound and a half a piece. They're like 3 pounds per pair. They're like nothing on your feet. They're nice and cool, even in 100-degree temperatures, and they feel incredible and they give you that protection. So it's like, why not bother? Why not wear them if I live here? You know,
that's what I hate about rubber boots is it feels like I have freaking ankle weights on when I'm walking around in them.
Yep. And they squeak when you slip on the wet leaves, and they make noise when you're stuck in the mud, they suction down real bad. They're clunky. I'm not a fan of the rubber boots, but like I said, there's times down here I got to wear them, you know,
yeah.
Or you could be like Mark, like I said, put on hiking boots and just trudge through the water and just go, I'm going to get wet.
let's get Schaefer really excited. Tell us about the closest encounter you had with a venomous snake.
Closest encounter would have actually been that big timber rattler in December, because I was walking through the woods, I would hunt deer in the morning, and then I would hunt hogs midday while I scouted for where I wanted to deer hunt. So it was middle of the day, and I'm like a mile and a half from the truck, and I'm slipping through this nasty stuff. I got to duck under everything and jammed in here, and I happened to see a squirrel sitting low on a log, but he was sitting on a log, and he had his arms and his legs hanging off. And I'm like, I got it all on video. I'm like, what is the deal with that squirrel? He must be sick. Something must be wrong with him. And then I walked up. I'm only like 2 feet away from this thing. And he just, you know, shaking and convulsing. And I'm like, I wonder if he's snake bit. And then I come around the other side and I look at his side and he's bleeding pretty good right there. And I'm like, he is snake bit. Then I'm looking around like, where's that snake? I don't see nothing. I'm like, oh, I'm going to put that squirrel out of his misery. I put a judo on, hit thunk, put him out of his misery. Take him, he's on the arrow. I fling him over there. He comes off the arrow. Looking around, I happen to look down right next to my leg coming out of a hole that was under an old pine tree is his head coming out. And as snake starts coming out, it's all on video. He keeps going and going and going. Snakes don't have to slither. Their muscles will move them.
They just kind of shimmy. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yep. And out came this huge, you know, timber rattler. And then he came out. But he didn't know where I flung that squirrel to. But it wasn't where he left it.
Right.
So then he comes, he followed me. He followed me for like 5 yards and he's coming toward, you know, and he's coming right at me. I'm talking to him, shooting video of him. And he's, you know, I've kept my distance, obviously, you know, a few feet so he couldn't get me.
Yeah.
But it was really cool. I actually walked him over to where his squirrel was. He followed me the whole way.
No way.
He found the squirrel and then he looks at me. He looks at the squirrel, looks at me, and then he turns and he starts eating the squirrel, and I watched him eat the thing. It was pretty cool. But he came out right next to my leg. You know, I never even knew. Hmm. He had no idea.
Yeah, I would have been jumping like a little schoolgirl.
That's so awesome. What's the video? Is that video on your Patreon or is that?
That is on my YouTube, with the exception I did not film the whole part of him eating the squirrel because of the fact that because of YouTube rules, you know,
right.
kind of thing. But it's on my YouTube, and I'll have to look it up. I'll send you a link to it. But it was last year. But yeah, that was a real cool encounter. And then this year I almost stepped on and tripped over a cottonmouth that was massive. He was huge. I got that pictures I put on social media. It's in my, you guys saw that in the Patreon.
Yep.
But that cottonmouth, man, and he was like nowhere near water. He was nowhere near water. So yeah. And then, hunting over by where Robert Carter is, you know, same. I literally, if I would have took one more step, I'd have stepped on that copperhead, you know. So like you said, and snakes won't usually give you a hard time, but if you step on them, they're gonna react, you know. And
that's I wouldn't be too happy if I got stepped on, right. So I mean, you can't blame them.
Yeah, but there are a lot of people down here like, ah, snakes are no big deal, or they don't wear them. But then again, two of the best hunters I've ever met in my life, Robert Carter and James Woods, and neither one of them will be in the woods without wearing snake boots or snake gaiters one bit. They will. And Robert even said too, he's like, I won't let anybody even come hunt with me. If they're going to come hunt with me, I'm not letting them come out here unless they're wearing snake boots, because I'm not going to ruin my day running them to the hospital, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. And if you get bit by a snake, it's probably $100,000 to $200,000, you know?
Oh,
yeah, and you're looking at a week in a hospital. You know, it's not pretty. You don't want to deal with it.
Ugh.
So snake boots or gaiters are not a bad idea.
Yeah,
and like I said, they give you peace of mind to be able to move quick, not pay attention, bust through brush. You know, I mean, it gives me that freedom, because you'll see when you get down here, 50% of this terrain, you cannot see where your feet are going. You know, and when you can't see what you're stepping on, you don't, you know, you'll know if you step on something and it feels like a wet Tootsie Roll, you better jump high.
Hopefully a 4-inch vertical is sufficient.
Right. That's about all I get to.
That's pretty wild.
I would assume snake gaiters or snake boots, you kind of look at them in the same category as a tree stand harness. You know, in reality, throughout your whole life, you may never need it, but.
Yeah, but it's worth the
day. What does it hurt wearing it?
Yeah,
that's a fantastic analogy. And like I said, if you're gonna wear rubber boots anyway, they make the same boot in a snake boot. It's just guarded, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But and literally, they're not any more uncomfortable. They're not that much different. I mean, they're more comfortable than the regular boots. You know, honestly, I love the snake boots. So yeah, I have no problem with them whatsoever.
I had a. Over our sportsman's club, we have an outdoor range, a 3D range. And I was shooting the one day and it was hot. It was July, August, something like that. And I shot the one elk target and I went out to get my arrow and there was a copperhead coiled up right underneath the belly of the elk target. And I just left my arrow there. I was like, I'm not going near that. Screw it. But yeah,
Yeah. James Woods was just telling me about a month ago, he was on one of his WMAs and he's like, and I jumped a creek. You know, he's like, I could have walked through it, but he's like, I jumped across this creek, landed on a bank. And when he landed, he kind of put his hands down and stuff. And he, right there was a cop or a cottonmouth sitting right there. He's nice. Like, he could have tagged me. He should have tagged me. He didn't. He's like, I pushed myself back up, stepped back, walked around. But he's like, you know, I mean, so like I said, there's, you know, there's not a lot of people getting bit by snakes. Okay. But the ones that do, you get bit by a rattlesnake. You are talking permanent damage, you know, that you will have for the rest of your life. You know, even if they fix you, you're going to have permanent damage. And I know people down here that I hunt with down here that they have family members that have been killed by rattlesnakes. Wow. You know, so yeah, you know, back before the anti-venom and stuff like that kind of things, you know, and it's like I said, it's interesting. And then pretty soon, once the temperatures start getting warmer, a lot of these WMAs, you drive these roads and you get these water holes in there, you know, that were they'll flood out. And I remember one time went to walk one of them to see if I could drive through it and kicked up an 8-foot gator out of it. a hole in the road. So like I said, it's always an adventure here. It is. That's what I was telling you, Schaefer. You'll see gators down here.
I don't want to brag, but I was shooting out back one day here at my apartment and I may have kicked up like a 4-foot garter snake. That's about my experience so far with snakes.
Yeah, it's still that or fucker though, didn't it?
It most definitely. Once I realized what was going on, it was okay. But that initial like slither, that was pretty sketchy. The only other real run-in I've had with snakes, and it was creepy. It was like a garter snake. I don't know what a baby snake is called, but it was like a cluster of them. They were like in a big rat's nest ball.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I was sitting and I looked behind me and it was like a foot away. That's just moving like softball size cluster of baby garter snakes. Now, like, okay, gonna move from here.
Snakes and gators are just fascinating. They're just, I mean, I'm not a fan of snakes, but they're just fascinating. I want to go like in my area, rattlesnake hunting is a big deal. They go out, they catch them, they release them. They don't keep them, but they catch them. Or I think you can kill one a year. I think in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
But I've wanted to go forever. I just to go experience it, bring my camera, photograph them. You know, we go to there's a town over by us and it's called Noxon, and they have the rattlesnake roundup every year. And seriously, like everybody from town goes up in the hill, grabs a snake, brings it down. They put it in a pit in the middle of these fairgrounds and they have their fair, right? And like, you know, there's rides for the kids and all that stuff. And then there's the snake pit in the middle. And there's everything in there, and they get them in the plastic tube so you can touch them and everything. And it's awesome. It's fascinating. Snakes are cool, but
you guys got a lot of timber rattlers and copperheads got there, and you got the black-faced timber rattlers too.
We do. I don't know if I have it on my phone or not, but my son and I, we were at ETAR 2 years ago coming back, and we found a black-faced in the middle of the road. We took this like back road home. Yeah, it was really, really cool.
I think Chris Knight, you and I were talking not too long ago, and he goes, Schaefer, I'm like, he's like, I think you'd be surprised how many snakes there are at the new ETAR location. I'm like, well, that's good to know.
Same with Denton Hill. I mean, Denton Hill, that Potter County area's got a good amount of rattlesnakes.
Yep. And you got once you got the rocks, you know, they love the rocks. You know?
Yeah. And that whole area, like where we live is, it's all like when you get up in especially the state game lands there, it's all just like boulders everywhere.
Yeah.
And you're walking through and there's going to be rattlesnakes and I'm going to send this over to you.
Awkward pause.
Send it over to you on the Instagram. But yeah, it's, I mean, that's kind of a part of the fun, but I mean, we don't wear snake boots around here ever. Probably should if we're going in those areas, but then again, when I'm in those areas, it's 40 degrees or less outside.
Right. And most of those guys doing those rattlesnake hunts, like the ones that on YouTube, they're wearing them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because they're all standing in the pit, too, all day long. And, you know, they're walking around, they're moving them with their feet and stuff. It's kind of funny. Yeah. But
Usually they won't bite you unless you're stepping on them, you know, even in those pits. Like, you see these guys kick them all over the place and stuff. Like I said, you know, down here, everybody's like, well, cottonmouths will chase you. They're aggressive. They're not aggressive. You can stomp all around. You can do whatever you want, but just don't step on it. That's the key thing.
Yeah.
I take my bow and I pet them with my bow, and they just sit there and flick their tongue. I mean, they're not going to bother you if you don't step on them, usually. I mean, there may be occasions, but... I like them. I remember first snake I saw down here was a very rare, actually. It was a pine snake, but it was huge, probably 5.5 feet long. And I saw it, and I was like, oh my God. And I sent a picture of it to Steve Angel. I was like, well, look, what is this thing? Is this going to hurt me? He's like, the only way that thing can hurt you is if you fell over and tripped trying to get away from him and bumped your head, you know? It's like, so I became fascinated with them. So now I know all the species, you know, I know what they are. I can spot them immediately, if it's dangerous. And living down here, I got it, especially because I'm hunting year round, all year. And when I'm out there in the summertime and it's a, you know, it's an oven in a jungle and you can't see anything, you know, like I said, you run into them a lot more, you know?
Yeah.
I know the other cool thing you were talking about last night, Jason, was the whole, how gators sleep. That was still mind blowing. Shut half their brain off and then.
They can't sleep because if they actually were to sleep, they stop breathing. They have to tell themselves to breathe. We are what you call an unconscious breather. We do it naturally. An alligator cannot. He has to tell himself to breathe. And if he were to actually go to sleep completely, he would die. So he's got a split hemisphere so that this side of his brain can sleep. And while that side's sleeping, this side does all the function. When this side wants to sleep, this one's awake, and it does all the function. So a gator is actually never sleeping.
Wow, that's weird. That's different.
Yeah.
My favorite, he goes, yeah, if the water freezes over, they just stick their snout out until it thaws the next day.
Thaws.
Right. Well, they get into dens underground where it's warmer, but some of the ones that you see, like in captivity around here and things like that, they don't have a place to go, and they can handle really cold weather, but they'll be in the water, when that water will freeze, they just poke their heads, their nose above it, and the water will freeze right around it completely. I've seen videos on it, and it'll stay there until the next day when the ice thaws, and then the ice thaws, and then they can go do whatever they want to. But yeah, it's pretty cool. They're a pretty crazy animal, and you see them in, like I said, when turkey season gets here, you will see gators in little bitty ditches and little puddles, especially that, you know, not always big ones, but you'll see 2 foot, 3 foot little gators. I mean, literally every, you know, you're driving on a dirt road and they're in a ditch next to you. You know, they're all over the place. And you gotta, when you go down these back roads for the first time and you want to walk a puddle, you got to throw stuff in there first to make sure, because of the fact that if you don't, like I said, there could be a 5 foot, 6 foot, 8 foot gator in that hole right there. And, you know, I don't know why they're in there. I don't know if they're waiting for animals to walk the edges of it, you know, like a coyote or something to come around the edge, or squirrels that don't want to get wet, but they're in those road holes. It's crazy.
That's wild. Oh, how long did it take you to get used to that coming from Michigan?
You still don't, you know, it still gets you kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of fun and I love it.
Yeah.
You know, but I got to start the other day on a WMA. Now, I think it was probably a carp or something, but I was right off a slough that came right off the river, and I had my wiggy waders on, hip boots. So I was crossing it, and I was right at the top of those wiggies. So almost crotch deep and coming to it. So I had to go really, really slow as I was moving. So I couldn't get water in there. Had my bow actually like string here and a bow hanging over on my pack so I could hold both waders. I was working through there, and all of a sudden the water next to me just goes, whoom, that black water. I'm like, whoa. It was probably a carp or something. But when that water starts waving like that and goes, your heart, you know, when you're was not comfortable.
Oh, that's awesome. Definitely would have crapped myself a little.
I don't think I did that, but I might have peed a titch.
Oh man, that's awesome.
And like I said, probably a fish, but it was enough to freak you out, you know.
But it might not have been.
I was about to say the best part is it's still probably a fish. Yeah, there's no confirmation here.
Not 100%.
Yeah, probably most likely a fish, you know, or a turtle or something like that. But, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, like I said, it takes a lot of getting used to. It's a different world. But the bees are the ones that I can't get. The hornets, the ground hornets.
Yeah.
Yellow jackets. Last year, Schaefer, you probably saw this if you watched last year's Patreons, but so last year, summertime, I'm hog hunting, and I stopped to do my business, and I got toilet paper hanging on a branch in a tree and ready, got my bowl leaned there, got as soon as I dropped my pants down, wham, 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 I got hit 13 times by ground yellow jackets. Lit me up, man, and I mean, all over my legs, my butt, I was just shredded by them. And so I run out of there. I never went back and got my toilet paper, you know, but it was kind of funny to see me run in snake boots with my pants around my ankles.
Oh, they're terrible.
Back in a bowl. But they got me pretty good. And then I went back 3 days later, and I was in a different area, a mile away from there, and I got hit four more times by him. Now, I obviously had my clothes on, but I got hit through the pants, on the shoulder. It's like, so those made it hard for me for a couple of weeks afterwards where I couldn't slow down. You know, like I couldn't slow myself down to be in still hunting mode because I was afraid if I stopped moving, I'm going to get stung again. It was psychological, but after taking almost 20 hits in a couple of days, it was like I did not like it.
Mm-hmm. They stay in like the dry areas, the real like the piney dry areas.
This one was bottoms. I was in hardwood bottoms, damp, wet hardwood bottoms. Yeah. But they were coming out of the ground, and then so you know, and then now when I walk by some of those hornet nests in the trees, they're like that big around and that tall, and you can hear them buzzing for 20 yards away. It's like, oh my god, those are the things that freak me out. There's nothing out there. No snakes, no gators, no nothing that's going to worry me. My biggest fear are those, the hornets. I don't like
them. Yeah, they suck. When we get droughts, like if it doesn't rain for a month or two here, they'll start building ground nests. And a couple of years ago, I had them underneath a couple of my targets, and I couldn't shoot near them because they were just in and out of there all day long. And they blasted me the one time, and that was enough. And then they got my son the next day, and just they suck.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what you do. Then it's literally you just go out there at night and you throw a pile of dirt on there. And then when you got the dirt, just poke a hole, drop an M80 in there.
Oh, yeah. I got pretty good stories about what I did to them. There's fun. They had a nest. They had a paper nest underneath my deck. Like there's the beam on the very end, and they were just on the other side. I'll tell this really quick. I took a piece of conduit, took a piece of 3/4-inch conduit. I bent a 90 on it, and I put... do you know what an LB is?
Yeah.
Okay. So I put an LB on the end, and I put like a 6-inch piece of like conduit coming out of it. So it was about that wide enough to fit in between the two 16-inch joists, right?
Just fill the whole thing. Right.
I put a coupling on it. I had about 15 feet of conduit before it bent that 90 up. I went out there at 10 o'clock at night, hooded sweatshirt on, everything zipped up. I stuck it all the way back and pulled it until the nest fell on the ground. And I took off running like a little girl, right? Went back in my house. Next day I go out there. The nest is on the ground. They're in and out of the nest all day long. So I ended up getting like, I think I went through 3 or 4 cans of spray. I would like hit them from one side, run around the house, hit them the other side. And I kept doing that until I killed them, but they're terrible. I hate them. Absolutely hate yellow jackets. They suck.
I did pressure washing for 3 years. Mm-hmm. I loved it. It was a lot of fun, but the houses, you always had hornet's nests on a house. And so what I did is I just hit them with, you know, I was using a chemical mix of bleach and water, and I just sit there and drown them and get them gone. And, you know, I could literally shoot them in the air as they were moving, and it did pretty good. But, man, I'd get caught off guard. I mean, I got stung probably 30 times during that whole process. You might be up on the top deck doing this, washing the house, but then they're under the deck below, you know, and then they come up through the cracks and you don't know. And they're wham, wham, wham. It's like, oh.
Yeah, that's how I found them. I was cleaning my flintlock barrel on the back deck, and they came up through underneath the deck and nailed me in the leg.
Yeah.
And that's when I looked under the joist. I was like, holy crap, there's a big nest right there, right in front of my face. I was like, ew.
Right. Yeah. So, I don't like those. It's like, burn off them.
No, they suck. They serve no purpose.
Yeah.
But
quality conversation is what they serve.
We didn't get an HVAC yet, Shaver.
That's true. Oh. This has been some good stuff.
Yeah, right.
I forgot to warn Jason how professional we were on this podcast before this he came on.
Not at all.
This is how it's supposed to be right here. Yeah.
This is why we enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
What are we missing? What are the typical Jason Samkowiak questions we haven't asked?
We've kind of skimmed the surface on a few of them. The Patreon, we did the mobile hunting thing kind of. I was trying to stick to I wanted to make it different Because Jason, you've been on quite a few podcasts, yeah. And you know, like I said, a lot of them, it's kind of the same thing every time. So I was like, let's see how we can make this a little different, more fun, and give Jason a different topic field to talk about.
Snakes and hornets.
I was about to say, not sure we've talked about bow hunting yet.
we haven't hit on it yet, but where can people find you on Patreon and all that stuff? How does somebody start following you and subscribing?
If you anywhere on Google or anywhere you search traditional bow hunting wilderness podcast, I pop right up. So everything's right there. Yeah.
Good enough.
Yeah.
And what do you have on your Patreon? That's besides like you have hunting videos, obviously.
The Patreon channel is, yeah, that's kind of my baby. It's all my hunting vlogs. So every time I'm in the woods, I'm making it. And I kind of do them like as a week or two or from one animal dead to the next animal. But I make these vlogs and they're like 45-minute full-length hunting videos, you know. So those are always running. And then I do Map My Hunt series on there where I actually I show areas where I've killed the animals at before. Then I show you why I went there, what the deer were expected to do, what they actually did. I show those. And then a lot of videos that are tips and suggestions and how to. And then I also got whiteboard sessions where we break down hunting tactics and stuff like that. So it's kind of my bread and butter, but it's nice because there's only like 120 people or 150 people in it. So it's a diehard group that I'm not afraid to give every secret to and really be right there with. And they're paying $15 a month to be in it. So, but it's quality kind of stuff, you know, stuff that you don't want to just give out there to spit it out on YouTube. And then when you walk in the woods, there's 30 guys there.
Right. And they can interact with you. They can talk to you, pick your brain stuff, right?
Yeah.
You got chat there or something. Yeah. Very cool.
Absolutely. Is there anything else we wanted to cover? We try to keep, we can go as long as we want, but, we find usually a little over an hour is kind of the sweet spot, Jason. So if there's anything you want to cover or talk about, it's whatever goes.
Right. Yeah. No, I think we covered it. I do agree. I remember, with my podcast, it was the same thing. That 45 minute to an hour, hour and a half, you start getting over that, they won't listen to the second half.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's just like YouTube videos. Everyone I put out 3 minutes in, it's it.
And that's
there goes
all,
the audience exactly. Retention. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they're yelling at me going, you're a 16 minute video for 3 minutes worth of content.
Can't please everybody.
Oh, man, the comments are unbelievable with the people you deal with.
Especially the YouTube ones are the best.
Yeah. Yeah. My brother's a programmer or like a software designer.
Mm-hmm.
Bug him all the time. I'm like, dude, I need you to make me an app. I want this app so bad. And he's like, what is it? I'm like, I need an app where if somebody upsets me, I can send them a link. And when they click on that link, my hand comes through their phone and punches them in the face 3 times. Can you make it for me?
Oh, that is hysterical.
That would be, I'd wear that thing out in the first day, I promise.
For sure. There's a lot of people that would deserve that these days.
Yep.
Yeah. My favorite is like my bear hunting video I did this past year. It's like a 20-minute video. And if you show it to another like bow hunter, or I guess just hunter in general, they get it. But like a lot of people I worked watching, they're like, wow, that first 16 minutes was kind of slow. I'm like, you mean the hunt?
Right. You mean what you saw 16 minutes? It took me a week.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. The kill was, the last 2 minutes of the video.
They're too used to Sportsman's Channel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hunts don't happen in 3 minutes.
Remember the, Dan Fitzgerald videos. Do you remember those? Either of you guys remember them? Dan Fitzgerald and the videos they would put out at the VHS videos in the 90s. But they were amazing. But some of those videos had like 89 kill shots on them and stuff. And, it was like one after the other.
That's like the classic video on YouTube. 20 kills in 20 seconds. It's like,
right, yeah. And I'm learning nothing from that, but it's the same view. I can put a video out even on the YouTube stuff. I put a video out on a technique or a hunting tactic that would really teach people stuff. And it gets, it gets a third of the views of me putting out a video on a game call or a flashlight or, a pair of boots, like I said, people don't want the real information. They don't want you to teach them how to do something. They want you to show them a product that will let them get it for free.
Yeah, yeah, it's all about looking cool,
Mm-hmm.
If you look good, have feel good.
I
look
love
good, I have love the gadgets.
Yeah. Yep. Somebody told me one time, said the more you know, the less you need. And it's kind of sticks with you. And, you know, you really dive into that and, you know, multi-use stuff. And but the tactics, and one of the videos I made for the that will be on a Patreon channel today, went into full detail about how you know, learning how to hunt something's one thing. But in order to do that the right way, you have to know everything about that animal. And actually, what made me think about it was when I was telling you yesterday about the alligators and how you were so interested in it. It's like, if you're going to hunt something, you have to understand everything about it, not just the tactic to find it and kill it, you know. That's the stuff that gets me motivated. I love learning about all these things.
Yeah. Absolutely. I know one of the things I still find really cool about the whole or at least, you know, where this hunt is, it seems to work that way. And it seems the same way on the WMAs. I really like the tactic of how you basically drive, you know, until you feel like a spot's good. And I like how you just do a big loop.
Yeah.
And then you end up back on the road and you walk back to your vehicle, drive a little further, do a loop on the other side of the road. It just makes a lot of sense in my head.
Well, a lot of the places, like the place where you're going to come hunting at, you'll realize that a lot of those loops, I'm making them because they're my only option. See, where you're going to be at, a lot of that terrain is so nasty that, like, when I moved down here and started hunting it, I would plan to go in and hunt this area. So I would park and then I'd walk and I'd get 200 yards from my truck and I have to go right back to the truck because I can't get through there. The brush is so thick or the water is too deep or something. But I mean, even waders, you just can't do it. Or you go to another spot and you get in there and you walk a mile and realize you can't get out any other way except the exact same way you came. So you run into these kind of things. So it got really nice when I could actually, like, when I find a new area I want to go to, it's like, I want to see if I can make a loop in here. And if I can get in there where I can get in and do a 3 mile or 4 mile, be in good hog country that whole time, and then get back to the road somewhere in there, those are the ones I save. Cause then I know if I want to go hunt that area, I got a fail safe in here. Even if I branch off, I got an entry and an exit out, you know? So you just keep creating loops when you're going, but you'll see when you get here, like I said, you'll park, you'll be like, oh, I'm going to go in there. And you're going to walk like 4 steps and go, dang it, put me back in the truck.
Maybe not.
Right, and that's what it is, and you get so mad because you think you can, and then you start going, and next thing you know the brush is over your head and you can't, you know, you literally can't get through it, literally, and you're scratched up, chewed up, beat up, and you know it, yeah, it's not fun.
This is gonna be a good time, Chris.
Maybe I won't go out on this trip. Geez, I don't know.
It is amazing. It is an adventure every single second you are out there. There is no doubt about it. It is always an adventure.
Definitely sounds it. Oh, man. It's
going to be a blast. I think it was Tony Messina. He had a little clip of himself walking through it, and he had he made like a Vietnam reference along with the clip, and then I forgot what song it had, but it was like absolutely perfect. Just everything just looked good.
I like the one of him hiding behind a palm.
Oh, it is.
Yes, yes. That was awesome. Yeah. That was great.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's too good. Oh, I can't wait.
You're going to love it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I was about to say, this podcast will probably actually drop while I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Will this be this Monday? Yeah, because next Monday, right?
Yeah, because we have one coming out this Monday, yeah, and then I'll be down there the following Monday.
Right.
Be finishing up. So as people are hearing this, you'll probably have pictures of you with like 4 or 5 hogs.
Well, hopefully. Sure, hopefully. So. My dad made fun of me because I bought a 4-pack of pillowcases. He's like, what are you planning on doing there, mass?
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. And remember, when you guys are down here, where you're camping at, you're not super far from me, you know, kind of thing. But if there's anything that you need as far as camping gear, a heater, you know, more supplies, gloves, game bag, you know, you need anything, you just let me know. I got it all right here.
Perfect. Oh,
awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We got it, Schaefer.
I just went into deep thought about the trip there for a moment, looking off into the distance. I think this has been an absolute great time, Jason. Absolutely. Can't say thank you enough for coming on the podcast. And
definitely, it was nice to finally meet you. Thank you very much.
Well, and I appreciate you guys having me on. This was a lot of fun. I like this relaxed, chill, just let it flow. You know, it's the way I like it.
We can do this anytime you want.
Yeah, well, I'm game.
All right, cool.
Beautiful.
Maybe we need to do a recap when Schaefer gets back, see how he does.
That'll be perfect. We'll have all kinds of fun content then.
we'll have to get we can do a little party cast. Get Mark on here at the same time.
Oh yeah, yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, God, I love Mark. He is, I like I said, he's a great guy. Yep.
I got a group.
20 years of infantry, and you know, he's seen it, done it, been there, and he wrote the book because he's got the skills.
I got a group text with him and Newman going on, and they've been freaking bashing each other back and forth the entire time we've been talking here. It's been good. Newman's trying split finger shooting right now, and it's been a comical day.
Yeah, I haven't met Newman yet in person, but you know, he seems like a really good guy too. I like him.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one. Two veterans in the same camp is gonna be a
well. You got not just two veterans, but an Army and a Marine. there's gonna be some crap talking. I'm sure you'll be entertained.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Oh,
awesome.
It'll be an adventure for you. And you'll see those guys at night in camp. You know, during the day, Mark's die hard.
He'll
be gone before the sun's up, and he won't come back till after the sun's down. And he's got the legs of a billy goat, meaning that he'll run circles around everybody. He'll come back. You'll be like, I walked 5 miles today. He'll be like, I did that before breakfast. See, he'll do 20 miles a day.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff, man.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jason.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. This has been a great, great time.
Appreciate it, guys.
Real quick before we go. Just want to take a moment and thank our partner, Black Widow Bows, along with Addictive Archery, Safari Tough, Great Northern Quivers, and Laurel Mountain Outfitters. Also, if you have a moment, please take the time to leave us a review. It really helps us out. On top of that, I just want to thank everyone for listening. Hope you enjoyed, and best of luck out there.